Before we start this week's show, just a warning to everyone listening that there may be content on this week's episode of Open Sources Guelph that might cause you emotional distress or that you might find triggering. And if that should happen, please feel free to reach out to someone who can help you through that. And just a warning to everyone that there will be some difficult conversations coming up in this week's show. Thanks. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz fighting Amber Alert fatigue, but I think we'll get through it. I think we'll get through this. If we can get through that, we can get through anything. But Adam's just shaking his head, but maybe it's a topic for another day.
It was at midnight. It wasn't at like 4 in the morning.
It was at midnight. It was at 1. It was at 2. The phone kept going. I built a Faraday cage, and I'm solving the problem. But
I don't know what's wrong with your phone then, because I got it at midnight, and then I didn't get it
and
again.
And then 12 Amber Alerts this morning. So
I must be a really good sleeper.
I won't mention the service provider. Rhymes with hell. Anyway.
It's not hard to narrow that down. Anyway. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians. Not this week, though. It's just going to be all news, including bad stickers. An Alberta energy company is trying to take back a disgusting sticker featuring an image of a young climate activist being sexually assaulted. So that's cool. But what does this tell us about the thoughtfulness and understanding of the people running the oil patch economy? Then we will talk about the Democratic primary race and who all is left standing after the superest Super Tuesday there has ever been. And then finally, speaking of leadership races, we will look at the official field for the federal conservative leadership race and who the party will be choosing to lead them into an October election this fall because the Trudeau government cannot stand.
Oh, that's... Yes.
We'll talk about that a little bit later. Wow. Nailed
right
that.
On the money.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Not too shabby. First, though, we have to...
5 years of practice, right? Yeah. Solid.
Solid. We do have to get to the blockades, the pipeline protests, all that. I mean, there was some change in the status of this, although there are still blockades up. I was going to say, the activism's kind of slowed down, just not here at the U of G yesterday.
Yeah, that was a bit, we were talking about a bit beforehand. It was not surprising that it happened, but I was leaving for the afternoon and was like, wow, what's going on? I was like, oh, this was fairly massive.
The size of it
turnout,
was surprising,
which
and
became,
the intensity of it was surprising.
Which has echoed occupations of the past, too. I'm not sure if you saw any of the footage of the...
Yeah, the Ontarian
classic confrontation.
The Ontarian YouTube page has a couple of good videos that are worth looking at.
Yes, good on you, Ontarian. You did a great job.
The government did meet with the Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chiefs last weekend. They set out a framework for future discussions. They didn't necessarily resolve anything, but it was like a positive 2-day meeting that probably should have happened 3 months ago or even 3 years ago.
Yeah, or 30 years ago.
Well, I mean, when this whole, the whole thing about the CGL pipeline got going, but I digress. But the real question is now, is this creating more anti-Indigenous racism in the aftermath, whether it's brought out some old racist feelings that if not gotten over, then definitely maybe silenced or got frozen there for a while?
Yeah, I mean, it's always there. There's a latent level of racism, and this is one of those things where you just go like, what were we talking about the comment pages getting shut down,
which is on absolutely Today, yeah.
On yes, and other places as well, which is like, you know, we can't do this anymore because somebody is going to go there, and it just Anyway, you talked about stickers off the top, and we're going to talk about that in a bit. Mm-hmm. But there's another sticker, too, that's making the rounds. And I don't know if it was the same company out west. Alberta Proud or Alberta Strong on the side of a train driving through the protesters. Now, the protesters were little stick people. They didn't look Indigenous. But what's with the stickers and the, you know, like who, that wasn't from a company, obviously, but somebody took the time to get done. And he said, oh, it was just a joke. How is that a joke? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, like I said, you couldn't really tell the ethnicity of the people being run over, but you would assume that it was supposed to be Indigenous people.
Well,
and related,
I mean,
but
who else would it be? Like, is Snidely Whiplash tying girls to trains again, or what?
Yeah, and it's probably inspired by that style of humor, which is long gone, right? It's like, oh, yeah. She's being tied to the tracks. But, yeah, so the blockades are obviously being the excuse for the people that are already racist to be more openly racist, right? And to just get it out there. It's like, well, and it, to me, it's always like it's always a sign of like the argument is weak or it's non-existent when they go to that place, right? When you go, rather than, I mean, you can rationalize a lot of ways saying, oh, the economy, you know, if you want to do that argument or I work for CN, all of that kind of makes sense, right? And that's rational and reasonable argument, you would say. But when it goes to that place, and I seem to be hesitating a bit because I don't really want to repeat anything, right? I think everyone out there gets what we're talking about. But there's like the Tyendega Mohawk who are still, it's the Ganawagi Mohawk are still protesting in outside of Montreal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tyendega got a death threat or several death threats. It was the Wet'suwet'en chiefs and the Mohawk in Belleville. We're sent like threatening emails, and it's, again, I'm not going to repeat it, but it's any of the blockades of the essence of an Indigenous protest is like they just go after them. You know, I'm going to come after your family. There's going to be a bomb waiting for you. It's stuff like that, right? And worse. So it's like, what do you make of that, right? It's like, why? Oh, I don't know. End of topic. No, but you know what I mean. It's like, what do you think
of anti-Indigenous racism?
No. What's your take on it? Because I'm like, I wouldn't say I'm tapped out. It's a little early to be tapped out. But I'm just like, it's so frustrating to like.
Well, it's so easy is the thing.
That's
not just the
that's
ease
it.
Of. I don't mean the ease of sending them. And of course, that's true too. And somebody mentioned that they spent, you know, they cleared 100. Facebook comments of people just, you know, responding to protesters with death threats and with racist comments and things. And I mean, it goes right down to even the kids. There was a out in Alberta, there was a case of one girl who said she was called a dirty I-word, let's say, by a fellow hockey player, by someone on the ice. She tripped over someone. This is hockey. Someone tripped over, this young Indigenous girl tripped over somebody, or they tripped over her and they both went down. And the other girl calls her, a dirty Indian, which, you know, it's, you know, start them when they're young, I guess. But,
well, and hockey has its own set of issues too, right? So,
sports generally.
Sports in general, but.
But yes,
our national sport.
Having worked at a hotel. With hockey parents coming to stay the weekend and seeing that attitude at play, there is a problem in peewee hockey. But that's an entirely
different
subject.
Peewee hockey is generally Whitey's domain in Ontario, right? No, realistically, right?
I most places.
The traveling teams are always anybody who can afford to.
I will say it again, on the record: ringette moms, great. Swimming moms, great.
And which
dance moms, great.
What were the other moms?
Ringette.
And
dancing. And swimming.
Swimming. Oh, swimming. Okay, yeah.
You know,
okay,
sports.
Okay, well, there you go. You do like sports, eh? Wow, and dance moms too, eh? Yeah, because they have a reputation. How did we get here, Adam?
Dance moms don't... I mean, maybe when there's dancing afoot, but in terms of like staying and treating hospitality people well, then dance moms are pretty good. Moving on, though.
Shout out to the dance moms, yeah. But speaking of not treating well...
But I mean, even things like... And I saw this story on Global. There was a case of a woman named Dillian K. Bose, who was in, I can't remember where, it's like North Bay. It was up north somewhere. But they were covering this story, Global was, about she was training to be a teacher. She was a mom. She was a wife. I mean, not that women have to be those things, but I mean, this woman was clearly connected to the community and clearly had close family who cared about her. She goes missing. They're writing about it. They're talking about, you know, the police investigation and all that. What do people do? Start posting racist, you know, stuff about indigenous people. And it's like, this family is trying to get information about what happened to their loved one. And your first thought is, this is a good time for something racist.
It's like, of course they went missing, blah. Yeah, right, I can imagine. Kind of I didn't read any of that or hear that story, but I can imagine that. And this is the problem. Over the past week, I guess, and you said this was going to be a topic, I had a look at APTN, which is I usually look at it regularly, but in sort of synthesizing some of the stories, and this is just in the past week, is what we're talking about, the pipeline protests, systemic racism against indigenous people in Thunder Bay by the Thunder Bay Police. And if you're looking for a good read, check out Seven Fallen Feathers by Tanya Tagala, which goes in depth about this topic. That's just a bit of an aside. Senator Lynn Bayak is back, right?
I'm glad you brought her up.
Complete buffoon. She can't even grasp the whole, take the training or whatever.
Yeah, she can't even take a slap on the wrist.
But she's like, she's decided that she's Métis because she had an adopted sister. And I would assume, who was Indigenous. And I would assume from her age, that person was probably a 60s scoop child. But again, that's another story. But Métis if your parents... Your white parents or whoever have adopted an indigenous person.
By the way, I'm a Jedi because I once dressed up as Luke Skywalker for Halloween.
Yeah, and I'm one of those little Jawa things from the sand because I'm, that's what I did back in the day.
I think it's pronounced Jawa.
Jawa?
Now who's racist?
Doesn't matter.
I can't believe we went Star Wars on this. Yeah. Because she was slapped on the wrist because she posted letters of support that she got from racist people who were backing her support
online,
saying that, residential schools weren't that bad. And it's like, you talk to a lot of indigenous people who got
all the people I
scooped up in the residential school system. Well, I mean, there are young indigenous people who never went to residential schools. I'm just saying, but I mean, anyone who went to a residential school is inherently messed up, even if they weren't the victims of like sexual assault or had a sibling or someone they knew, a friend, just like not show up to school anyway. Like, just people
because,
who went.
Because by its nature, racist colonial structure. And you could argue, and I didn't actually read it, but I saw there was one posted about somebody arguing about the railway in and of itself as a massive symbol of why we have these divisions.
Yeah.
And protesting the railway makes total sense because that represents, that sea to shining sea stuff where it was just wide open. No one there.
Also, the railroad also kind of inherently racist if you dig down on it, like especially for Asian people of Asian descent in Canada, many of whom were brought here to work on the track.
What was that line? It was like there's
a dead Chinese man for every mile of the track.
And that's not...
It's not an exaggeration.
That's probably not wrong, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's probably lowball, too.
It might even be more, yeah.
It's forcing people to think of the structures of the country or rethink the structures of the country. I would consider the fact that we talk about it more as progress. But on the other hand, you get this Leger poll that says, 79% of Canadians say that they were aware of the issues in terms of the federal government and treatment of indigenous people, but 44% say that there is, I mean, also almost half, 44% of people say that the outcome of the blockades is a lower opinion of indigenous people. It's like, well, those things don't jive because either you are more aware of why indigenous people are angry and maybe thus have a monochrome of understanding about why they would occupy train tracks, or you're just ticked off that, maybe your store is running out of your favorite type of frozen pizza because the train's backed up. I don't know. Or you couldn't, go somewhere for reading week because you had a VIA ticket and they canceled the VIA trains because that's when they did it. It was the Thursday before reading week, which, fair enough. But, I mean, these are also minor inconveniences compared to 500 years of colonialism.
Yeah. And one of my favorite comments, which was made by an indigenous person, was about the rumored lack of chlorine that was going to happen. And it's like, well, you can just do what we do and have a boil water advisory for 25 years, 30 years, 40 years. It's sort of a pointed attempt at humor, but definitely funny nonetheless, and like in that terrible way where that list was circulating about all of the reserves in Canada.
If Rockwood was on a boiled water advisory tonight,
yep, it would be solved by next week.
They would have that solved by Monday. Yep.
It's like, oh, we can't do this. We can't. And somebody mentioned the dark teams. Like, the dark team can go into the middle of nowhere and make bags of pure water.
Yeah.
Come out of the air, pretty much. Yet there are like scores of places in Canada where that's not the case. So we need to fix that. Because we're working very hard, Justin would say. But anyway, that's
Justin. He's still. Has a lot to answer for.
Yeah.
And now he's going back to these, like, hey, everybody, let's have a cool photo op, or I'm going to talk about some stuff and take press questions because everything's cool now. And it's like, no, it's not. But since the mainstream media plays along, we'll have to talk about something else for now.
Yeah, let's talk about something else.
Right? So you may have seen this decal, this sticker that was... brought to the attention of the nation by Michelle Narig from Alberta. She was quite appalled by it, understandably so. It was a picture depicting a young girl with pigtails and the name Greta written across her lower back in a pose that would seem to indicate, and I've seen a lot of media outlets call it sexually suggestive in quote marks, and my thought is like, no, the point is, whoever's behind this young girl is raping her. And the message is, we're sick of Greta talking trash about the oil patch, so we're going to rape her. Which, again, I know from a lot of young female activists, this is not a unique, shall we say, opinion that they have to deal with. But it is kind of especially disgusting that it came from Excite, which is an oil patch business, actually pretty well-known business because I recognize the name right away. So this isn't some fly-by-night operation. These are people who have been in business for a while and really should have known about it.
Well, yeah, if I understand it right, I think they're like a fracking supply company. So again, that's another thing. But the fact that you would make this your promotional materials, and there was a time, and it's not that long ago, where business promotional materials had things like the calendar and they didn't have clothes on, and then they would have clothes on, but it was all suggestive. And I've still, as somebody who works in the trades, have seen these things on occasion. Again, it's not as often, but and obviously not here on campus, but in other places and other jobs I've had. It doesn't matter. It's getting phased out pretty much. What on earth made you think that this was a good idea? And the weird part, did you hear about the tattoo artist who drew this?
Yeah.
He's suing for...
Argentinian.
A guy from Argentina is suing for plagiarism because it's like, hey, that's mine. And I think it's disgusting that you're using it for that. Who gets this tattooed on themselves, right? It's like, well, really?
If I can explain his intellectual argument,
okay,
which is that...
Try me, because I don't think it's going to work. But,
he said his, a lot of his work is about separating sexuality and having sex and you know, enjoying sex. And he didn't mean it to be used. It's like a specific reference to a specific young woman, an underage young woman who...
But don't pigtails imply something... Like, am I just
youth?
Really old?
No,
or...
no, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. I was explaining his justification.
No, that's like the bizarre angle. So these guys who, and it is guys, who came up with this sticker couldn't even come up with something original to, you know, have a shot at Greta. And it sounds like Greta handled it pretty well. Eh? Like, she's like, oh, it shows, what did she say? It shows that we're winning?
Yeah.
And I went,
which
I went,
is also kind of a Trumpian line, but I'll let her have it.
Oh no, because it's probably totally intentional that she used that,
right?
But the business itself seems to be like massive. The stuff that I saw online, they're massively backpedaling because it's probably affected their business. We will do better. Okay, whatever. Like, we're not in buying fracking supplies, so we probably don't care out this way. But
I mean, it's also hogwash too, because like, Global and other media outlets like trying to get a hold of him, like saying like, hey, can we get a comment on this? And he refused to comment. He just wouldn't say anything about it. And this woman, Michelle Narig, called him And she basically said, like, he dismissed her. Like, he dismissed her concerns. And she's not some climate activist either. She's someone who's in Alberta, supporting of the Alberta industry. She was upset that, you know, handing out stickers like this is presenting the industry in a way that she doesn't think it represents them. That, you know, this attitude of, you know, oh, you're protesting oil, we're going to rape you. That doesn't represent the vast majority of the people in the oil patch. Fair enough. I think on an individual basis, yeah, this doesn't represent the majority of people. On the other hand, this isn't the first time we've taken great artistic license against critics or perceived critics of the oil patch. And I was thinking of Come West Trudeau. That hoodie.
The hanging hoodie.
Yeah, noose from a tree and underneath it says Come West Trudeau. And you ask anyone who's even moderately progressive, which I know is kind of an oxymoron, but, you know, even someone who's like slightly, even somebody slightly to the right of Bernie Sanders, ask them what they think of Trudeau and his oil policy. They are not happy campers. So, but I mean, of course, a lot of effort, energy, and yes, money has been invested to paint Trudeau as the adversary to everything that the oil patch stands for. So, of course, we have to hang him from a tree.
And yeah, and that is, you know, to have your issues with Trudeau and Trudeau's policy is one thing, but then to go to this place. Mm-hmm. And it would, you know, the more you dig into this, the more that you find out that, and I've heard about it over the years too, that culturally, in the oil patch sounds like in places, in lots of places, is a very toxic mm-hmm. environment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The so-called man camps. Now, there are a lot of people that will say, there's a lot of people in the business that will say, oh, it's not really that bad. There's a very, very, very low, that's Trumpian kind of too. It's very, very, very low. Or Doug Ford. Where am I going with this? There are very low percentage of women working in the trades in general, but also in the oil patch. It's men. They're in a camp. It's hyper-masculine culture. There's no doubt that that is what's going on. It's been implied in places that the situation of missing and murdered Indigenous women has a direct link to this industry.
Yes.
North Dakota also.
Yeah.
With the Bakken oil field. There'll be an expose every once in a while about, oh man, look at these guys. Because it's volatile, it's precarious, it's boom and bust. One day you're making thousands of dollars.
And there's nowhere else to spend it.
You may be making nothing. There's nowhere else to spend it at the bar.
Yeah.
So you're medicating. I'm not making excuses for these people, but I'm just saying, where is this culturally going?
Right.
A bunch of isolated men is never a good, well, a bunch of isolated anybody for that matter, but like it finds its roots in settler violence. This goes right back to what we were talking about the first topic, right?
Yeah.
You have this, like, and I'm going to say capitalist because there's no other word that's coming in my tongue right now.
I don't want to say capitalist, but I
going to say it anyway. It is, though. It's representative of that whole, we're just going to rip the resources out, don't get in our way. And you create this environment, the camp environment, where this, what is it, 93% male environment,
mm-hmm.
where culturally that kind of talking, like I was saying earlier about the calendars and the, you know, the excuse is like, well, the guys always want to blow off some steam. Whatever, mm-hmm. blow off steam. But that doesn't include this, mm-hmm. right? Especially, mm-hmm. well, not even just... It includes Indigenous women, it includes women in general. But then the implication of this, that, oh, I'm going to get my frustrations out about this girl's opinion by assaulting her. Like, it makes absolutely no sense. I'd shut him down. Like, no time for this, right? This is possibly one of them, of all the blockades and all the stories coming out. And this is the most disgusting in my book. And I hope... This is my personal hope. This is in my opinion that they lose a ton of business over this. I don't know. You're not supposed to wish that on anybody, but if they collapsed, I would not care. Well, but they're a fracking business too, right? They are exactly. They're the antithesis of where Greta is in the scheme of things, right? So I don't know. Maybe they have one where they're like doing something to David Suzuki as well, right? Who knows, right?
Well,
but what does this is your promotional materials? You put your business name on this? What the hell's wrong with you?
Well, I would argue that they wouldn't do that to David Suzuki because
the image be perceived as racist.
Well, the image of also the image of raping Greta is
No. I just meant something
more,
else. Like
it's more derogatory than like putting like putting like a caricature of David Suzuki with like a stab wound, which would be like even more explicit.
Or the
like,
hanging thing.
This is kind of like to the mind of certain people. This is more jokey. Like, ha, 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 we can rape her. I did find the original Sparrow comment that Michelle Narge said, that he said it, that it didn't matter because Greta is not a minor because she's 17, which is like, almost makes it doubly icky. Because,
somebody makes an inquiry about this, and that was the answer from that guy?
Oh, yeah, well, according to Michelle Narg.
I don't ever encounter this guy.
Michelle Narg. To bounce off a couple of things you said, the thing about the man camps and things is that it has been studied that this is a big problem in terms of like creating job opportunities for women in tech and in trades. That also in a lot of these places you have women who are playing the traditional female roles, which is like they're working the supportive jobs. If they're working at all, they're like
the remote Tim
they're
Hortons
waitress and, or waitresses or working service jobs or working like secretarial jobs. If they are working at all, likely they're probably at home with the kids because someone has to travel far and work for several weeks far away. So someone has to stay home with the kids. And generally, because these are well-paying jobs, it allows women the ability to be homemakers. And this reinforces a certain like quote-unquote old-fashioned thing as well. And then NPR did a report in 2015 that was like, there are a lot of people in the trades who are retiring soon. There's going to be a lot of opportunities, actually a lot of opportunities in the trades now, but it's only getting, you know, sort of more plentiful. And that is work that could be filled by new women trained in the trades and the various skills needed there. But of course, you're going to say to a woman, do you want to go somewhere where 9 out of the 10 people you deal with are men, or more than 9 out of 10 people you deal with are men? And then you stick out like a sore thumb, and then it's like a normal race situation.
I think there are a lot of opportunities unrealized where for women in the trades. Just in urban centers as well. Just in general, like the potential, like you're saying, because it's emptying out. And I can speak from experience too, right? It's like, maybe I shouldn't speak too much from experience because I might go over that line and my own personal line because I work here in the trades. But yes, forget the trades. What else are we going to say here?
I was going to send it to commercial.
You said it's commercial now. Okay,
sure. It's at the end of the half hour.
Yes.
So let's go to commercial and come back after the musical break with the news of the two old men that might be the 46th president of the United States. So we're going to talk about that in a sec. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
And that song was written by a Donaldson. His name was Walter Donaldson.
No relation.
We don't know that. I'm just kidding. 1930, Little White Lies. That sounds like it was 1930 because it was recorded straight to a 78 RPM live. But it was really recorded in 2017 down in New Orleans by Alex Pagman and her Hot 3. And they play Manhattans quite regularly, so Google them. I think they were here on Valentine's. I believe there's a show coming up maybe in a couple months, but I have yet to check them out, and I really, really want to see how many Donaldson-themed songs they will play, or at least written by. So you should get a nickel, I think. And that was just a coincidence. I wanted to listen to this, and then said, wow. Why does it say Donaldson? Because Adam Donaldson wrote it in 1930. All right, what's going on?
Speaking of 1930, maybe not quite, almost.
Yeah, pretty close. Good one. That's 10 points right there.
So we had Super Tuesday in the United States. It's basically when they had 15 primaries, including one for American Samoa, which is technically a territory.
A Yeah.
But still, they had 15 primaries. By the end of it, now 40% of the possible delegates have been awarded. And now it almost literally is a two-man race. I say almost because I believe Tulsi Gabbard has yet to drop out.
But she won American Samoa. How can she? Or did she? Or no, was
that was Bloomberg.
That was Bloomberg.
Even Bloomberg saw her writing on the wall.
I think her one delegate may have come from there, but.
Maybe. But yeah, so going into Super Tuesday, actually, we had the big South Carolina primary. Joe Biden won that handily. Double the amount of the votes that Bernie Sanders won. After that, Tom Steyer dropped out Saturday night. He was the other billionaire in the race. He turned around and endorsed Joe Biden. After that, Mayor Pete Buttigieg dropped out on Sunday night. Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minnesota, dropped out Monday night.
They're dropping like flies.
And then she and Buttigieg and former presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke joined Joe Biden at a rally Monday night where they all endorsed Joe Biden. And now it is more or less, as I said, a two-person race because Elizabeth Warren has officially suspended her campaign. So now it is a Bernie versus Biden, which is kind of where all this was going.
And Elizabeth Warren, that just happened this afternoon, right? I was sort of cramming. I was like, oh my God, she's out too. So, but she hasn't endorsed anybody though, right? Or
no,
has she?
She hasn't endorsed anyone.
So she's being coy, I guess. I'm going to sense that it's probably not going to be Bernie, but it was Elizabeth Warren's sparring against Bloomberg, supposedly, that gave him a bit of a smackdown, let's say, even after spending $500 million U.S., to win American Samoa. So what a champ. I heard it from more than one person. I don't know if it's one of those lines that's that just sort of catches on, so I'm gonna use it too. Joe Biden is Lazarus. It was like Joe Biden is coming back from the dead. I honestly don't, as much as I like Bernie Sanders, I'll admit that. Mm-hmm. I will be the first to admit. It's pretty clear. I think it was last week sometime, and it was in the New York Times, saying that the superdelegates, we talked about superdelegates yet, so there's all these delegates that are voting. Then there's the superdelegates, the Clintons, and people that are well-established Democrats. There's probably a few Kennedys in there. They have like...
at least.
Yeah. Probably quite a few. Have sort of this super ability to vote. And it sounds like they've all clubbed together and they're saying there's no way it's going to be Bernie. There's no way it's going to be Bernie Sanders.
Well, the superdelegates don't come into play. And if the way this the convention works is that they have the first ballot where it's just based on the delegates that have been won in these primaries and caucuses. And then if there's no clear winner after one round of voting, then the superdelegates come into play on the second round and then people can move their votes around.
But I think the superdelegates are probably doing that backroom stuff. And you can bet, well, Obama is somebody who would be a superdelegate, or Michelle Obama. So I've got a feeling that maybe Barack had been making some phone calls for his friend Joe. And supposedly this is, it's a little bit simplistic to make this split, but the analysis seems fairly clear, is that Joe Biden is getting the Black American, Democrat American vote. Yeah. And I think a lot of that is because he was the two-term vice president. I almost said prime minister. The two-term vice president to Obama. So there's a connection there. Bernie's doing well with the Latinx vote. Right. So everybody has their kind of piecemeal who is going for them. And I probably clearly, because of his connections with AOC, is probably winning him some favor there. But now that with the dropouts who all seem to be going Biden, and I'm high certainty that Elizabeth Warren will come out maybe a little bit reluctantly. Or maybe not. Maybe just come up full bore for Joe Biden. Because we have to beat Donald Trump. That seems to be the line.
See,
we have to beat Donald Trump.
Right.
So Bernie is going to beat Donald Trump because of X, Y, Z, right?
Well, Bernie's whole...
He would, though, but that's just my opinion.
Bernie's whole theory of the game is predicated on this idea that there is this big revolution waiting for him to be the nominee. And the problem is that seems less and less likely because if they can't show up to vote for him to make him the nominee, why would they show up to vote for him on election day? Because that's what happened to Donald Trump. Is Donald Trump was an insurgent. Donald Trump was not a quote unquote establishment person, but the party faithful voted for him just the same.
Yeah.
And
and the evangelicals, even though it's...
And it wasn't because people in the Republican Party weren't trying to put those fingers on the scales. They did not... Like, the establishment Republican types did not want Donald Trump.
No, and they denounced him up until the last minute, almost. The last, right? Like, yeah, the last possible second. It's like, okay, he's our guy. We have to go with him.
So it's really hard to make this a similar case that, you know, the Democrat... After all of this, after, like, 24 people, after, like, two mayors from New York being involved and all of this and... You know, Mayor Pete coming from nowhere and Beto O'Rourke going down in flames so early.
Yeah, because when he came back there to endorse Biden, I'm sure there's people like, who's this guy?
It's like, yeah, I literally said it. I was like, Beto O'Rourke ran for president. But, it really is hard to make the case that there is some grand conspiracy trying to keep Bernie out. The other side, and it's also kind of insulting that, you know, all these black people in South Carolina are in the pocket of the billionaire class, because one of the things that I don't think has been talked about much is the Venn diagram of a lot of working class black people, but also a lot of working class white people who, you know, believe in sort of the old fashioned Americana, pull your bootstraps, although at the same time recognizing that there are
the American dream.
Yeah, people are sort of tipping the scales, but they believe in the old-fashioned way of doing things, and that is more emblemized by Joe Biden, not necessarily Bernie, who, you know, was always talking about revolution, but still the revolution Bernie's talking about just hasn't materialized, and in fact he's lost some momentum. He lost states that that he won in 2016, like Minnesota, like Oklahoma. Massachusetts, he lost. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm sorry, Bernie. This isn't a matter of, like, the establishment going against you. It just, like, you haven't been able to, you know, deliver on the big promise. And if you can't deliver on the promise to win the nomination, there does leave a big question. Like, can you deliver when it counts in November? And I think a lot of people are speechless, which is why I think, I think at some point, whether it's later this week or next week or a month from now, Elizabeth Warren is probably going to, you know, grit her teeth and endorse Joe. Because I think a lot of her people are going that way too, because I think a lot of disaffected Warren voters.
Get the spray like South Korea after the coronavirus.
Are also disaffected Hillary voters. I think they saw Elizabeth Warren as the heir apparent to Hillary, and there's still a lot of hard feelings there when it comes to Bernie.
Yeah, but to be fair, Elizabeth Warren didn't really have the track record that Hillary had. But that again, that's, you know, you can't do a rerun or a do-over on Hillary, as much as I think it was implied that Hillary wanted to, but she's not in the running, although she is a super delegate.
She is starting a podcast.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out, eh? It's
going to be dope.
I'll listen to it like maybe part of once or something. I'm not sure. But there's something to the American – I mean, I said the American way before, but the Americans generally like the outsider story, the loner, the rebel daddy, like Trump was, even though he's a billionaire, super establishment type, but he's out there, right? Mm. And I think they were playing up really strong how Bernie is out there, but in a way that America doesn't like, because he's a leftist and he's a communist. I think he's done a great service to those that identify as socialists, that's not seemingly as dirty a word as it was up until maybe this time around, although he's never backed down from calling himself that's democratic socialist to you. But it's definitely not the dirty word that was, although Trump calls him a communist. And crazy Bernie, right?
But, crazy Bernie. But well, again, crazy Bernie and sleepy Joe.
Trump was like, yeah, I think Joe's got it. I think he was talking about Joe like he was an old friend. But of course, you know, and I was picturing how the debate is going to go, because it's probably going to be Biden. It's going to be like, what about Hunter? Like, we're going to hear the name Hunter Biden so many times.
I've seen some people online talk about that. It's like, well, everyone's now going back to their old Oppo research about, you know, the Bidens and Hunter Biden and Ukraine. I mean, but at the end of the day.
Trump didn't have scandal, right? We're almost at the point where these things don't matter. It wouldn't even matter to what degree that Hunter did
matter.
Other than riding
Donald
on.
Trump
it should matter.
Like but. A third of his presidency at one of his tacky resorts.
Yeah.
And by the way, the golf carts that the Secret Service are using to follow them around all over the golf greens, not using them for free. They're not staying at the Mar-a-Lago and other Trump resorts for free. I mean, you can't. And this may be the time to sort of now that it is just Bernie versus Biden, that they can refine their arguments and be more incisive now that we know that one of them is going to take on Trump for sure. They have to sharpen those attacks, because anything that Trump's going to come after them with, they can easily go back after Trump with. You want to talk about socialism? Talk about socialism for the rich. You want to talk about corruption with Hunter Biden and Burisma? Talk about freaking Donald Trump Jr. and how super PACs loyal to his father bought enough copies of his stupid book to put him on the bestsellers list.
Yeah, and he got that permit to hunt a baby elephant or something. Yes. I despise that guy.
All of Ivanka's trademarks. Like Ivanka's existence in the Oval Office, period.
Oh, no, they've gotten their own merits. They didn't ride anybody's coattails like Hunter Biden did. They all do it. Yeah. They all do it at that level. They do it at lower levels. Forgive me for sounding a bit too Bernie AOC, but that's I mean that goes with the territory. So
I mean that's
we'll
kind
see.
Of
but
the scary
I think
yeah.
by the weekend, probably or not much longer, Elizabeth Warren will come out and side with. I'm going to assume Joe. I'm really reluctant to think that she would go with Bernie. Although Bernie's going to be her great friend again. They'll all be great friends again after this, even though it was
so Bernie
pretty
people
nasty.
The Bernie people have been pretty unfair to her, because they're like, she's been taking the blame for Bernie not winning Super Tuesday, even though there are many cases where Bernie taking Elizabeth Warren's votes would not have made that much of a difference. Some of the things like they're. You know, a lot of Bernie bros have been accusing like the establishment of like backing Biden as like an affront to Bernie. Well, a lot of those people are talking about conspiracy with Warren folks to go against Biden. And you know, that's not.
Yeah,
that's not cool.
I mean, the short version is the establishment is going to pick who they think will win. And it's at this rate, it's going to be Biden. You hear any? They're already talking vice presidents. I heard Kamala, mm-hmm. Kamala Harris. As a potential pick.
She would be a solid pick. I think Amy Klobuchar would be a solid pick. Hmm. I think.
But it seems that the trend is that they're aiming for a woman.
If
a woman of color would be like.
I mean, it is Bernie and it's either going to be Bernie or Biden.
Could be
one
Tulsi.
Of them. Oh, my goodness. No, thank
what is,
you.
What's. I mean, I don't want to get too into it, but she's still hanging on. Eh? Like,
yes, she's still hanging on. Maybe, I don't know. But if it. Since it is going to be Bernie or Biden, it is going to have to be it's going to have to be someone, a woman or a person of color, probably under the age of 50. And I think that's, you know, there's certainly a list of perfectly acceptable candidates. I would consider Kamala, I would consider Klobuchar, I would consider, heck, Mayor Pete, I'd consider Cory Booker.
Yeah, anybody that was in that race.
Yeah.
And I heard Nina Turner, who isn't super well known. Not Tina Turner,
Stacey
but
Abrams too.
Nina Turner, Stacey Abrams. I really like Nina Turner's podcast, actually. So, but I don't get to pick. We don't get to pick.
Let's talk about something a little more close to home: the conservative leadership race.
Ooh,
we
so
have
exciting.
A party of eight. Eight is enough, as I sarcastically put on our
I
website.
Could have dialed up that theme somewhere.
But so we've got Marilyn Gladeau, who is a conservative MP. We have. Jim Karahalias, who famously sued the provincial PC party.
Oh.
Leslyn Lewis, who is an Ontario lawyer, unsuccessfully ran for office in 2015. Derek Sloan, who is a rookie conservative MP. We have Rick Peterson, friend of the show, who is an Alberta businessman. We have Rudy Husney, who's a former staffer, ran in Outremont twice and lost, and is the only Quebecois candidate in the race. And then we have Aaron and Cancel Culture O'Toole. And to bring up the end, there is the front runner, the presumptive front runner. Actually, let's be honest, the presumptive next leader of the Conservative Party, Peter McKay.
In all likelihood.
Who is now running on a platform of we need to have an election in October.
Yes. And there was some. McKay, O'Toole, and I think Gladue came out and were all said. I think Gladue was the first to say, we need to get rid of this government. We need to get rid of it on October. It seems to be October.
Yeah.
Maybe it's so they can put surprise. It can be the October surprise. But speaking of O'Toole, I found this interesting because this is where our stories cross over. Aaron O'Toole was buying a bunch of advertising on Facebook in French and English, spent a pile of money denouncing the rail blockades.
He was also endorsed by Kenny today.
So that it sort of goes with the territory.
I just saw that before we came
Now, is he the one that keeps using true blue conservative?
Yeah.
Does he consider himself a social conservative?
I don't think so. He hasn't really gotten into that. I mean, he's been more into the like, our universities are too liberal kind of side of things.
So
which
he's
I don't
leaning
think
that
way,
but he
other.
Probably he doesn't have the Christian element, I guess. Because who was it said? It was a candidate from Quebec, and they said no.
Richard Dakari?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They said absolutely not. You can't run, right? Because he's being backed by Trost.
Yeah.
Trost is helping him, so that'll give you some idea of where that would have gone. Go, Trosty. Go.
Well, I mean, it's weird that he isn't sort of in the race that because Husney is kind of leans that way too. No, not Husney, sorry. Sloan I'm thinking of. Sloan has also been endorsed by Campaign for Life. So has
The science is out.
Jim
Karaholios
as well. Jim Karaholios has also been endorsed by Right to Life. You know, he's also against carbon tax. And also, he's the husband of Ontario MPP Belinda Karaholios, MPP for Cambridge. So he's like the local candidate, I guess.
Maybe he's local enough we can get him on to talk about it. And our friend Rick Peterson. We'll see. But anyway, so the only person that seems to have their full criteria in line at this point is McKay. So he's paid the $300,000 and has, what is it? Is it 5,000 signatures? Something like that. So there's a progressive amount of money to get in the race and to stay in the race, and that's why there's some candidates are a certainty, declared, and possible, right? There's I can't remember their official rankings, but...
No, I think that's right.
They have until March the 25th, 2 weeks, to get all of that in order. And it was... Tim Powers used to be on the panel on CBC for years, a conservative operative, said that, in his opinion, that's when the actual race is going to begin. That's when we'll know for sure who's in it.
Well, the two official debates are in April, too. So
yeah, so they have to get rolling for this October election that we might have. But of course, for that to happen, they need the backing of either the NDP or
the Bloc.
Greens or the Bloc, and maybe the Greens, too, to make the numbers. Maybe not. How many Greens? Three. So they'll need more than the Greens. But the likelihood of that happening, unless the Bloc get PO'd enough to bring down.
Well, would the Bloc get PO'd enough to bring down the government on an issue of spite, which seems to be like the presumption is a couple of things. First of all, that this is the end of June where they choose the leader. So by then, Parliament will have risen for the summer. So this will be, first of all, several months after the blockades and after all the controversy dealing with that.
Unless
and then there's a whole
again.
Summer break between that. So basically what Peter McKay is proposing, that as soon as Parliament sits in September, there's going to be a motion of non-confidence in the government. And what's it going to be on? Something that we've likely, given the speed of the current news cycle, forgotten about by then? Is that what he's proposing?
It has to be a big ticket item, right? So it won't be like the response to COVID-19 or the response to blockades. It needs to be something like budget or something heavy for it to ride on. And that would probably be the only way that we'd get any backing on it. So it's great to, it's not great, but they're talking the talk at this point. And it's still just all talk, but essentially they all piled on there. It was kind of funny. It was like, oh, she said it, he said it, and then he said it. It's like, we're gonna get rid of Trudeau. He's the worst thing ever.
That's also what they're running on. Like, why do you want to be the leader of the Conservative Party?
Because Trudeau sucks.
Well, right? I mean, sorry, that's what Andrew Scheer ran on.
Yeah,
What was last year? 2019.
Seems so long ago.
It does seem so long ago. I was listening to a podcast today and they're like, wasn't it a couple of weeks ago Trump was impeached? And it's like, but it feels like a million years ago.
When Scheer was taking all those jabs at Trudeau and co. And it was like, oh, look at him go. It's like,
but it's just,
first of all, where was this when you needed it? And secondly, it's like, you're yesterday's man. Every time I see this guy, I think of the, him milking his own parties and the kids to private school. Like, so anything comes out of the guy's mouth, I'm just like, yeah, whatever.
Well, this is it. He's a lame duck now. And every time
he could be the lamest duck they've ever seen. Next to like Kim Campbell, right? It's like that level of you're going to go.
Yeah.
Right? So
you know,
I'm sure he'll do well in whatever boards of directors he ends up sitting
on. But at
on.
The end
they'll
of the day,
I feel. Piece.
I mean, Aaron O'Toole's like running against, like, you know, he posted a thing on Twitter today that was like, "Oh, you're blocking Canadian oil. Why don't you block foreign oil instead, stupid liberals?" And it's like, okay, I don't necessarily agree with that. That seems kind of stupid, but at least it's an ethos, as opposed to Peter McKay, who's like just seems to be like, well, like, I guess it's me.
Or isn't it great that they hauled away those protesters? My two guys in a truck can do more than Trudeau's done in
more than Trudeau.
8 years.
But it's yeah,
like, that, and then he deleted it,
which is stupid, which is silly and reactive.
It. Yeah,
and it absolutely doesn't tell you why Peter McKay should be leader. What he's going to do that's different,
which means he's
and how he's going to reach out to people who didn't vote conservative in the last election, because they've maxed out Alberta, they have maxed out Saskatchewan.
Yeah, he can't go any.
Meanwhile,
further.
They lost Milton, they lost Kitchener, Conestoga. They lost places in Mississauga. These are places you need to win. You need to expand the party, not. Affirm your commitment to guys with pickup trucks.
Guys with pickup
you
trucks.
You got that vote.
Yeah. That is a done deal. And that's the thing. You need to expand the tent and include all those people that are humming and hawing about Trudeau.
Karaholios, good for him for putting his name forward. You have to admire anyone who's going to put their name forward to run. But at the same time, he's running on getting rid of the carbon tax and, I'm angry about abortion. Sorry, that's not going to win you votes.
No.
But somebody like Marilyn Gladeau, meanwhile, she's not a person of color. I'm thinking of somebody else. But
no.
But still, she's phrased her campaign as, I'm fiscally conservative. No, I'm fiscal common sense and social compassion. And I'm like, that's a solid message.
Yeah.
That's how you set yourself apart. However, I do wonder how many people have heard of Marilyn Gladeau. And
I had never heard of her until we started talking about this a couple months ago.
Leslyn Lewis is a woman of color, I wanted to say. But having said that, she really doesn't have... She's the poor woman who took up the nomination in the riding of the guy who peed into the cup.
Oh,
after he
my
got out,
favorite moment of
it was,
that election.
After he got out, she took over. So, like, good
the
on her...
The handyman guy.
Good on her for being a team player.
That is stepping up. Kudos to her, because that's a tough act to follow.
Yeah. And then, again, Sloan is the guy who, said that, sexual orientation, there's no scientific basis. He's tired of political correctness. Political correctness is destroying Canada. I hate the carbon tax. And it's like, it's so
McKay
weird.
And get it over
it's
with.
So weird because I remember talking about the 2017 leadership race and people were like, this is a placeholder election until like the next one where they can get like the real leader because there's just so many people with so many different ideas.
Yeah.
And it seems like, no, this is the placeholder election because we're still not there yet. We're still running on this, on things that we maxed out when we were able to win a majority of 155 seats. Well, now the threshold is 180. So, what are you going to do?
Should have gone with Rona. All of our Ayn Rand dreams could come true. God bless Canada.
Ayn Rand dreams, complaining about the government while being on welfare.
Yeah.
Bruh. Anyway, that's the end
go
of the show.
Take a toot around on your yacht.
You can listen to the show on our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or on Twitter at OS_Guelph. You can also download it every Monday from the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or find it on your favorite podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. Or you can go to my political site, guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. Yacht free. Since 1970.
You had a blog in 1970? Interesting.
It was a crayon.
Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we will see you then.